Welcome to the new year and new me, leaders. You guys know what I'm talking about. We're kicking off our year with our third live podcast episode. Yeah, we know we ended 2018 with the live Charleston episode, but we couldn't leave Columbia out. But right now, we're preparing for the legislative session, which starts today if you're listening on Tuesday the 8th. So be sure to listen often because we're going to be there to guide you through the entire legislative session as it unfolds. Now, for this episode, we taped in front of a crowd of 100-plus leaders at White Mule in Columbia last Thursday. And again, if you missed it, don't worry, because guess what? We are planning other cities, not just those big city hotshot cities that we've already visited. So reach out to us on social media with any locations, hint breweries, you think would be great for us to tape from. Also, tune in to South Carolina ETV and South Carolina Public Radio on Wednesday at 11 a.m. for live gubernatorial inauguration coverage hosted by myself and Russ McKinney and Felicia Eady. Now, without further ado, say hello to 2019. Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of January 8th, 2019. That's right, 19, not 2018. This week, we're taping live in front of a bar audience in Five Points. Hello, everybody! And we're talking with two of the top Statehouse reporters about what to expect from the legislature in 2019. Education reform is at the top of the list, and some bills from the previous session have already reappeared. Where will they go over the next 2 years? And South Carolina has $1 billion in additional money for its budget. Who will get what is already fueling a feeding frenzy under the Copper Dome here in Columbia? The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections of our podcast while you're homesick since you're around your extended family over the Christmas break. Please wash your hands, or as you're botching your New Year's resolution, to be more humble. We get it, Karen. We got AirPods too. And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, South Carolina continues its rapid growth. The Census Bureau announced that the Palmetto State was the 9th fastest growing state in the country. Take that, North Carolina. Year over year, the state has grown 1.3%, putting the population a little over 5 million as of July 1st, 2018. Now, this comes after South Carolina was estimated to surpass the 5 million mark in 2020, but the population reached that target in the first half of 2017. Number two, the Associated Press reported in December that South Carolina GOP Chairman Drew McKissick is rolling out a victory program for the 1st Congressional District this spring with the goal of winning back the seat in 2020. Newly sworn in Representative Joe Cunningham pulled off one of the biggest midterm upsets in the country when he defeated former state representative Katie Arrington for the Lowcountry seat after she beat incumbent Mark Sanford in the primary. Number three, we got a boondoggle update. Where's Andy Brown? Is he out there? You wanna come up here and talk about the PSC? The Public Service Commission voted on December 14th to allow SC&G to charge its ratepayers $2.3 billion over the next 20 years. Residential customers will continue to pay what they've been paying since the legislature passed a temporary rate cut that took effect in August. So you will not get that $1,000 check from Dominion people. Don't send me any letters. Also, SCANA was just purchased by Dominion, so they're going to be changing things up pretty soon. And SCANA is SC&G's parent company. Customers will be paying a lower rate, so they won't be paying getting that $1,000 check back. And number four, the Post and Courier reported in late December that South Carolina will not join other coastal states in suing the Trump administration to halt permits for exploring natural gas and oil off its coast. Actually, there's been a development. Okay, calm down, folks. This is how news works. According to friend of the pod, Associated Press reporter Meg Kennard, Attorney General Alan Wilson has decided on January 7th to file motion against the plan seismic testing and offshore drilling along the South Carolina coast. The Attorney General filed a motion to join a lawsuit against the federal government, which was also filed by 16 South Carolina cities and towns
and the state's Small Business Chamber of Commerce, reversing a prior stance against suing the Trump administration. Okay, back to the quorum call, folks. Back to the live taping. It's Hollywood. That's how the news business works, guys. I can't control it. I have to just bring you the latest news I can give you, okay?
So, just like that horrible gift you had to re-gift under the Christmas tree for your dad, we buried the lead again. So I don't know what your resolutions were, but the lead is here to help you become more informed, and hopefully that's one of your resolutions. We strive to make things understandable, especially what's going on here at the State House. Some people don't even know that they have House representatives and senators and representatives that represent them up here at the State House. So to kind of give you more understanding about what goes on up here and what top issues are going to be going on this year, we brought two of the best reporters covering the State House on this show to talk about the legislature, the General Assembly, the State House. Those are all interchangeable terms you hear all the time, and we want to help kind of break down those differences so you have an idea about what people are talking about. So we brought the Post and Courier's Shauna Adcox with us. Shauna's been up here before. And our first-timer, Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press. Really just throwing Jeffrey into this. You know, live tapings are different than when we tape in the studio where it's just us. So we appreciate you being here, Jeffrey.
I'm just trying to work my way up to Walter Edgar's Journal.
Ulterior motives have been revealed.
Jeffrey with the jokes. Come on.
Also, we're absorbing campaign trail. Didn't give you any heads up on that. So we have more time to talk about this. So we won't have a campaign trail today. So today we had a legislative workshop. We had the South Carolina Press Association hosts this every year. It gives reporters from across the state to talk with lawmakers about what the top issues are going to be this session. Shauna, myself, and Jeffrey were there. Just want to kind of get an idea from both of you guys about what your top takeaways were from that session today. I know we have some specific issues we're going to talk about, but I kind of want to get your ideas about what you heard and maybe what stood out to you. Shauna, go ahead and talk
well,
about that.
Well, education reform and tax reform will be the two biggies. Whether they can actually get something done is yet to be seen.
Yeah, education reform, if we had this podcast back in early November maybe or right after the election, I wouldn't have thought education would have been quite as dominant as it is. But between the Post and Courier series on education and apparently what looks like Speaker Jay Lucas has been thinking about over the past several months, education is going to be a very big deal. I mean, it's going to take up a lot of their time, it appears.
They made a lot of promises, so we'll see if they follow through with them.
Yeah. And they were some of the reporters were trying to pin them down on promises, but we know it's so difficult to say, we're going to change the funding, for example.
Well, they made promise that some big changes will be made. They didn't want to be pinned down.
Do we have any idea what those big changes, Shauna, you worked on that Minimally Adequate series with the Post and Courier, looking at the problems that face South Carolinians in education. What kind of big changes in terms of either legislation or funding need to be, I guess, handled to fix that problem?
Well, the consensus, if there is any consensus, is still teachers need to be paid more. Mm-hmm.
Some people agree with that, it sounds like.
It sounds like it. And there's also a general consensus that something needs to be done to allow teachers to do what they love, which is to teach instead of spending a lot of their time on bureaucratic paperwork and testing and that sort of thing.
How many teachers do we have in the audience? Can I see some hands?
And the other biggie they want to do is streamline, and this is more from the GOP, is streamline the funding formulas, because there's a multitude of them. Now, whether more money needs to be put in or whether it just needs to all be shaken around a little bit, there's disagreement.
And Jeffrey, kind of what Sean was talking about, I mean, it sounds like maybe some of the easier things to do would be a pay bump for teachers. There's extra money in the budget, which we'll talk about, that could help facilitate, an easy raise for teachers and maybe streamlining some of these issues within the classroom as well. Is that something that you maybe heard from lawmakers today?
Yeah, that's kind of what I got from them. And one of the more interesting parts of today was to see the reaction of a few of the Democratic lawmakers when the Republican lawmakers were talking about, they were choosing some statistics that show that perhaps the problems aren't as dire or there doesn't need to be more money put into the system. There was some reaction from Democratic lawmakers that I found kind of interesting, because ultimately, if anything gets done on education this year, it's probably they're going to have the Democrats on board to do it. There's so much wide space between one part of the Republican Party and the other part. There's always going to be some Republicans that they won't be able to drag into this effort. I think about the Roads bill and how long it took to develop that, and they needed all the Democratic support they could get to be able to get the ability to raise more money for Roads. So.
Well, and I did note that initially they said no more money is needed, and then they started to walk that back a little bit and say, well, money is an issue, but it's not the only issue.
I mean, Jeffrey, just elaborating a little bit more about the role that Democrats play. We're going to talk a little bit broadly about what the State House really does for people that don't follow it as closely as we do. But why do you need that Democratic support when you have majority in the House and the Senate of Republicans? And what role do they play in compromising and working together?
There's a lot of different flavors of Republicans in South Carolina and in the legislature. There's certainly ones that have signed no tax raise pledges, that are very conservative on social issues, and have very conservative districts. So the Democrats, if they act as a block, they can provide enough votes where they can force legislation in certain directions, because otherwise it doesn't pass, because there's that Republican group that may not vote for it.
And today during the workshop, we heard from, several important lawmakers, and not everyone knows, the legislature, the ins and outs, how a bill becomes a law. Obviously it sounds so easy how it goes through the committee process and is introduced before and, works its way from the House or the Senate to the other chamber. And something we're looking forward to this session, too, is that we have some important new committee chairmen, too, over the House Ways and Means Committee. Mm-hmm. You have Merle Smith, who's Republican from Sumter. And then you have, over the Judiciary Committee in the House, you have Peter McCoy from Charleston. They were both there today. Merle Smith was talking a lot about the budget today. Peter McCoy wasn't talking so much about judiciary issues. But any inkling that we might see some different mentality coming out of the State House because of these new important chairmen?
Well, McCoy is certainly, I guess, sort of new blood, a younger chairman. So we'll see what he does.
Well, we did see him do a lot on that, the whole utility reform committee, essentially. That really kind of helped kind of establish him during session with Scannon.
I think that's why he's chairman.
Yeah, exactly. And what about Merle Smith? We heard Merle Smith talk today a good bit. He replaces Brian White, which was kind of a big shakeup.
Big to do, yes.
And it is one of the most important, because what does the Ways and Means Committee do, Shauna? You're like the resident budget guru. They're kind of a big deal because they do craft
the budget.
They write
the budget, yeah. I mean, the budget starts with Ways and Means, and the budget chairman, Ways and Means chairman, really gets to decide how that money is spent. He wields a lot of power.
So lawmakers get back on Tuesday. You're hearing this podcast on Tuesday. They're in session. House Ways and Means starts crafting the budget immediately. They're having subcommittee hearings. They're doing all these things. I mean, they're learning about how much to fund, education, right. Prisons, all these different ins and outs. I mean,
the Senate gets their crack, but Ways and Means is first.
Is it going to be any difference, you think, mentality-wise, or do you think it's going to be...
I think that's yet to be seen.
Yeah. Jeffrey, what about you?
Well, yeah, the Brian White taking him off Ways and Means as chairman was a very interesting move. I tweeted the day before that it was a kinder, gentler House with Jay Lucas, because Jay Lucas is a very...
Speaker.
Speaker Jay Lucas is a consensus builder. He's the kind of guy that tries to bring everybody together. He listens to everybody. That was another thing that hit me listening today to Democrats is, somebody like House Minority Leader Todd Rutherford, who's very acidic about Republicans and he can be have a very tart tongue about what they do. He had nothing but praise for the Speaker Jay Lucas, and that was unusual, but I think it speaks to Jay Lucas's leadership style. So, when you first saw that they had taken Brian White off the chairmanship, you're like, whoa, that was a very, I think I used to age myself a little bit, a very Godfather-esque kind of move, consolidating power. But in a way, I think he's trying to shape this committee to something that will kind of do what he wants it to do. And obviously, education reform is as he said it out front, it's one of the speaker's biggest priorities. So I think he wants somebody in there that's going to help usher that kind of idea forward.
Well, and for Lucas to come out in the organizational session and when he was reelected speaker, to say education will be a top priority, mm-hmm. and we must get this done or our students have no future, that was a huge thing.
That was, frankly, I think it was a big surprise. I mean, I didn't see it coming, I'll say that, So.
So the Democrats are very much appraising him on that front.
Yeah,
I mean, we heard that today. And we were even hearing from Democrats, Todd Rutherford was talking about Governor McMaster today, who just got reelected. So it's going to be interesting to see, and we were talking about this, Jeffrey, about... is McMaster going to change from from his previous, role in dealing with the legislature, which has been somewhat, as far as we can see, even worse with them. He's not using that bully pulpit like his predecessor did as much. Are we going to see that change, do we think? Or do we think that, based on what we heard today, that there's going to be more of a friendlier relationship with him, depending on what they want done?
It's to be determined in a way. I mean, the governor hasn't come out and said what his legislative priorities are yet. I'm guessing we'll probably hear a little bit about it before State of the State, which happens in mid-January. Then we'll probably hear a little more about it. The big difference in my mind in Governor Henry McMaster from 2018 to 2019 is 2018 he's facing a primary where he knows he's going to have multiple people coming at him from his right side. So he had to kind of speak a little more, can be a little more conservative and try to shore up that base so he can make it through that primary. Mm-hmm. He's got 4 years now so that he doesn't have to worry about, re-election until 2022. So, he can come out and support some things that might make some of the further right people in the Republican Party upset, but he can do that now with the safety of knowing that he's got 4 years. If he chooses to run for re-election, he's got 4 years before that might happen.
And any chance of him becoming more of a bully? We remember during the gubernatorial debates when everyone was talking about all these great things that they would do as governor, but we all know that when you get in here, you have
very little power.
Very little power. Governor Haley was always good about, really just kind of pressing the legislature and kind of coming after them. Did that work necessarily? Not so much.
Not so much, no.
She'd go on Facebook. She has a new Twitter account, too. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to rep it here, but she has a new Twitter account. But, do we see McMaster being that governor, Shauna? Or is he, he seems like he's taking the more softer approach, and it seems to be working.
I think he'll work with legislators behind the scenes and give them maybe some cover, perhaps.
And vice versa.
But I don't really see him as being out there on the trail and getting holding news conferences around the state like Sanford or Haley used to do. But maybe he will, because they've been, people have been pushing him, including in our Minimally Adequate series, to get out there and be on the bully pulpit and ask for education reform. Mm-hmm.
And since we're talking to you, Shauna, we have $1 billion would be nice to have, for anyone to have laying around, especially that lottery winner in the upstate who has not claimed his prize yet, but whatever, if you're listening, go get your money. We have an extra $1 billion. What?
Half of it's one-time money.
Yeah, can you explain all that and how that works?
Okay, so half of it is supposed to only be spent on one-time expenses, like maintenance and that kind of thing. And the other half is money that can be spent continuously. So when they talk about $1 billion, yeah, it's $1 billion, but you can only use it for different pockets.
And did we hear?
And there's a lot of needs out there.
Yeah, we've talked about deferred maintenance before. I don't know if you have that number.
We've got like $2 billion in deferred maintenance around the state, just in state buildings.
And Shauna, you remember Jim Davenport, and what he always told me and you and everybody was the biggest arguments in the State House happen when they have more money. When they get cut. It's when they have the extra money to argue about spending.
There's more to argue about, yeah.
Yeah. Do we get any inclination during this briefing we had today about where some of that money might be directed towards?
They were very excited about trying to raise teacher salaries. Greg Hembree brought up raising state employee salaries by 10% over 3 years, which...
All state employees, not just teachers.
Yeah. Which that would be something to see. Obviously there's a lot of deferred maintenance needs. One of the things that someone brought up was if you have a $1 million home, but you do nothing about it for 10 years, it's no longer a $1 million home because it falls apart. And then from the recession of 2008, there's a lot of deferred maintenance, a lot of things that haven't been done in the state to infrastructure and those kind of needs too. There's going to be a lot of hands stuck out when the budget process starts.
Then you have higher education, have universities coming calling.
We got a $60 million election system that needs to be bought. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's the estimate.
And then you also have your typical funding requirements, your reserve funds and your Medicaid costs. All these things that go up every year.
Medicaid costs are going up. Employees' pensions growing up. Employees' health care.
Yeah, we didn't even really get into the whole pension discussion today because
I don't think anybody really expects anything to happen with it.
Because again, last year that was supposed to be year two of it, but then SC&G, that took up the entire session. Do we think that education reform is going to be the main topic of this? Is it going to take up all the air in the room essentially, or?
I don't know about taking up all the air. But what I find interesting is they have these two kind of dual tracks on tax reform and education reform, and those are extremely complicated issues. Yeah. And normally they only tackle one complicated issue at a time, so let's see if they can walk and chew gum at the same time.
But Jeffrey, it's a 2-year session, so this goes from January to May, and all the bills that don't get passed in May, they can get carried over to the next year. If they don't get passed by next May, then it's done for. That's how it goes every 2 years. We have a new session, essentially. So this is the start of a new session. So sometimes a lot of work gets done the first year. They say, oh, we'll do it next year. I mean, can they come in and not get something passed on education when there's been so much pressure, so many stories, and so much, it sounds like, good faith on doing something?
I think they want to do something. Now, will they solve the entire problem? No. I mean, I think almost anything that happens in this state takes time to go through. I mean, and you know, you mentioned they're going to have to probably deal with something with Santee Cooper at some point in this session. I mean, it's, you know, especially over the 2 years. I mean, the debt that Santee Cooper has just builds, and the longer it waits, the greater possibility that Santee Cooper's customers are going to have to pay more for their electricity. So, you know, I think they will get something done in education. I think they want to get it done, and I think the people that want to get it done are the kind of people that like to have accomplishments and achievements. They don't necessarily like to just talk about it. I mean, will it be one of those deals where a lot of stuff gets through the House and it goes to the Senate and then it doesn't get past that? I think that's probably a pretty good possibility too.
But, you know, it's kind of switching gears. I know there's a lot of bills that have been pre-filed. I've talked to some people about sentencing reform has been something we'd heard about today as well. Medicinal marijuana is something that Senator Tom Davis has talked about. He's optimistic that they can get some movement on medicinal marijuana. I just want to change up a little bit, change off topic. I mean, we saw that kind of make some movement in the previous session, but it always seems to hit the same snag. And even if it's the House or the Senate,
we'll see. I mean, it got further last year than I thought it would have gotten. The big stumbling block is our state law enforcement division chief, you know, Mark Keel, along with other law enforcement. Yeah, they don't want it to happen. And I mean, you know, and a lot of lawmakers defer to their judgment on any kind of law enforcement matters. You know, it'd be interesting to see if that moves forward at all. I mean, you know, there's. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, Tom Davis, I believe, you know, felt like it could happen fairly quickly. I think that's one of those things that if it does happen, it'll happen later on in the session after some things happen and, you know, and things kind of organically develop a little bit and there's some give and take. So,
because right now, I mean, these things have to get through committee to get to the floor. And, you know, these big bills, I mean, sometimes you want to get things out quickly out of committee. Sometimes they're going to take more deliberation. You don't want to clog everything up. I mean, is there any insight you can give, Shauna, about how the committee might work in terms of getting easy things through first and then maybe more complicated issues later? I mean,
well, in terms of education, Ways and Means and the Education Committee need to get that out quickly before the budget hits the floor, because if they delay, then it's the chances go down substantially.
Because the House gets the budget out around March, sends it to the, gets on the floor, they debate it for about a week.
Right, and then, at least what was said before, the priority was to get it to the Senate before they take up the budget, because once they take up the budget, there's
things really good.
Nothing happens.
Mm-hmm. And that's not an overstatement there. Just really quick, I know we've talked about a lot of things really broadly, because we are broad right now. We don't have any tangible things. There's a lot of bills that have been filed, but they haven't moved yet. So we're just kind of giving an overview right now. But anyone want to give any curveballs that they might expect? I mean, some things just come out of nowhere, but any bills that struck your eye in the pre-filing, or anything that, you know, we've seen in the past that we might expect again to see come up this session that might follow the same routine as it did before?
Well, I think you'll certainly see the House doing House kind of things. You'll probably see the House pass an abortion bill. That happens every session. And we'll see. I mean, there could be some momentum on that side, though. I think that the difference between, say, this year and other sessions is the change in the federal judiciary that has happened since President Trump took over means I think there'll be a little more confidence in maybe whatever, if you do pass a more restrictive abortion bill, it gets passed. You know, it passes judicial muster. Mm-hmm. That's always a possibility. You know, they'll talk guns. They always talk guns. Yeah. There'll be some debate over that. You know, there was one interesting pre-file bill that I saw that would make stealing packages off people's porches,
the porch pirate
bill, a felony.
Yeah.
And I suspect if that comes up for a hearing, there will be a lot of attention paid to that.
Anything struck you?
You know, sports gambling might be something to.
Yeah.
All right. Well, some people like it.
You can follow along. You can find out when these hearings are. You can find out what these bills are. You can find out who your representative or your senator is. SCStateHouse.gov. It's all right there. It's a little cumbersome, but it's probably one of the better statehouse websites I've seen in the country. So it's easy to follow. And again, just kind of closing out, Santee Cooper, they talked about it, but it sounds like it's just such a complex thing. It's not going to be, they're not really any interest in making it the SCNG-dominated issue as it was last session.
Said, we're kind of tired of energy. We don't want to discuss this that much.
Well, and SCNG was the easy part. Santee yeah. Cooper is the hard part.
State-owned utility, it's part of that boondoggle.
It provides electricity to co-ops, but it also owns lakes and land, and all. It's going to be a very complicated thing to unpack. And unlike SCNG, where lawmakers could say, "Hey, we're working to cut your bill if you're an SCNG customer," there's no end game to this that doesn't end with Santee Cooper and the co-ops having to raise rates. I mean, that's just, you know, the state-owned part of that, it subsidized their rates for a while. So that's going to be the hard part of addressing it, because they can't promise anything good. All they can promise is medicine at the end. All they can promise is an increase. So.
Yeah, and it might sound easy. Oh, we'll just sell Santee Cooper, but you have, what, $8 billion in debt we were talking about?
Yeah, eight or nine. That's not all nuclear, but just everything.
So more money, more issues, but plenty to talk about, plenty to watch. Obviously, things change week to week. That's why we're here with The Lead. That's why these guys cover it daily for you, and we'll be bringing you the latest. So stay tuned with The Lead throughout the legislative session. Keep up with SCE TV. We broadcast the session live on our channels, and we'll be giving you updates from every week, essentially, with our reporters like Shauna and Jeffrey. I appreciate you guys being with us, and then our other stable reporters as we go forward. So stick with us. It's not as complicated as you think, and that's what we're here for, to make it nice and easy and understandable. So thank you guys for joining us, and happy session.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gavin. Glad to be here.
In our final section, did you know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. Now, did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back with some more great state trivia for us?
Hey.
Well, he is.
Glad to be here.
And Russ, who's your friend? Who did you bring along here? I see we have State Representative Micah Caskey from Lexington. Micah, congratulations on being on the show.
Thank you. It's an honor and a privilege.
It's a lot of pressure having an officer of the court sitting up here with us. So,
and Micah has to say, did you know, he has to use the statehouse rules when he talks.
I'm not asking the question, though.
I know, but you have to add, anytime you talk, you just have to say, did you know?
Did you know? Okay.
I'm not asking the question.
Did you know? Okay.
So, Russ, give us that question.
Okay. Well, since we've been talking about the upcoming General Assembly session, the questions tonight are going to really get a deep dive into State House General Assembly trivia. Most of you all know that since earliest times, there have been two houses in the South Carolina General Assembly, an upper chamber, which is now the Senate, sometimes in early days referred to as the Royal Chamber. Representative Caskey, and then the lower chamber of the House of Commons, which is now the South Carolina House of Representatives. For many, many years, the upper chamber, the members were appointed by the Lord Proprietors on behalf of the Crown. But probably earlier than you think, members of the lower house, the House of Commons, which is now the House of Representatives, were actually elected. So the question is, in what year were the first members of the South Carolina House of Representatives voted on and elected to serve?
All right.
Okay.
Easy for anyone that's been around.
Come on.
A, 1719. B, 1776. C, 1790. D, 1895.
Okay, so give us those dates again besides the first two.
Okay, A, 1719. B, 1776. C, 1790. D, 1895, which is basically the current constitution that we operate under today.
Okay, so who thinks it's A, 1719?
I like 1719.
Okay, who thinks it's B, 1725?
1776.
1725. You wonder how I get these right all the time. 1776. Great year.
It's a good year.
C, 1790. D, 1895.
A lot for 1790. Okay, 1895. I'm going to admit this right now. I've seen Russ's his answers, and I've seen the correct answer, so I'm going to abstain.
Come on. You got to not look.
I couldn't help it.
Okay.
Look at the sun.
The correct answer is A, 1719.
Hey, that's what I
was going to guess that. I didn't get the guess. I knew.
Jeez.
Okay.
Russ.
Congratulations to that small few that raised their hand. Okay.
Now, there were a number of restrictions in 1719 on who could vote. And, you know, who could stand for election. But 1719 was the first year.
Russ, thank you, as always, for some of that insightful trivia. Micah, thank you for playing.
Thank you for having me.
And we appreciate all of you guys out there helping us and helping me, honestly, get this trivia question right.
Thank you, Ryan.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV every Friday at 7:30 and every Sunday at 11:30. All of that, this podcast and more is available on SCETV's super easy to use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at SCLEDEPOD, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at SCLEDPOD. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to SCLEDE@SCETV.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier, the Associated Press, and again, thank you to White Mule. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Caitlin Park is our social media strategist. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced at White Mule in Columbia, South Carolina, on January 3rd, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Dry January was invented by Big Water.